Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Karen White, the New York Times bestselling author who's out with her brand new novel, Dreams of Falling. In the book, she takes the readers to Georgetown, South Carolina, where Larkin Lanier left when she turned 18 years old, but she returns when her mother Ivy is in a coma after falling through some rotting floorboards at the family's abandoned rice plantation where nobody's lived since the mid-50s. It's when Ivy's mother, Margaret, died there in a fire. We learn about Margaret and her two friends, Cece and Biddy, and as Larkin unfolds a half century of family secrets, it goes back and forth between several generations, past and present in this one, Karen. Georgetown, South Carolina, I know this place has a love for you. It's rich with history. Former First Lady Michelle Obama's family has deep roots there. What attracts you to Georgetown, South Carolina?
Well, it's in the low country. It's it's between Charleston and Myrtle Beach, and you take that Highway 17 basically through the low country, and I've done that many times on book tour, and I've always, would pass by the little exit that said Georgetown, and I never, I didn't know anything about it, and I guess a couple of years ago on book tour, I was passing through Georgetown, and sure enough, there was a sign that said Annual Shag Festival, and I thought, well, gosh, Georgetown sounds like a fun town. And so I took the exit, and I started exploring the town, and it's sort of like a mini Charleston. There's so much history there, beautiful architecture. It's on two rivers and, the marshes, and it's so gorgeous. And, it's got the oaks and the drapey moss, and I just thought it would be a, gorgeous setting for my next book.
Well, this is told from several different viewpoints, including Ivy while she's in the coma. What particular challenges does a coma victim provide to the narrator, as a narrator for you as the writer?
Right. I don't think it was until I read The Lovely Bones that I thought that something like that was even possible. But I think, that's always the voice that we never got to hear, the person who's in a coma, the person who's always already passed. Traditionally, those are the voices we don't hear. And I guess I got the courage from The Lovely Bones to try something like this, and I thought it really worked. I loved getting into Ivy's head. And what was so great is that she was the sounding board. She was helping solve everybody else's problems without speaking, because they would speak to her, and they would figure things out as they were speaking to her. So she was sort of the silent partner, but I really enjoyed that. But we got to hear her inner thoughts and sort of explain some of the things that the people were saying to her as she's lying in the hospital bed. And for her story to come full circle, everybody else's problems had to be solved before her end could happen.
When Larkin comes back, she's an ad executive in Manhattan. She comes back to the South. I think about when people I know who've left our Midwestern town where we live and go to New York and mm-hmm. come back, and they're different people. They don't like the local pizza places that we have because now they have New York pizza. They talk like New
right.
Yorkers. Somebody like Larkin
right.
goes back to the South. It seems like when Southerners go back home, they become Southerners all over again as if they never left. What is it about that phenomenon of the South?
It's really interesting, and I use my mother as an example. My mother was born and raised in Indianola, Mississippi, little town in the Mississippi Delta, and my father's job with Exxon meant that they moved all over the world. They would live in London. We lived in London for 7 years. We lived in The Hague for 3 years, in Venezuela for 2 years. But every summer, we would come back to Indianola, where everybody would know my mother as Catherine Ann, and everybody would know me as, you're Catherine Ann's girl, and it was just, my mother would just shed who she'd been in London and all these other wonderful places, and she became Catherine Ann again, not Kathy, as she was known to my father's friends and business associates. And she would just shed that mantle. And there's something about the heat and humidity and growing up in the South that is in your blood, and it will come out of every pore the second you step over that border. And it certainly happened with my mother. Like, her accent would return. I mean, I don't think it ever left, but it would get heavier. She was talking to her sisters who never left Mississippi. They have very strong accents. And it was just always really fun to see my mother shed her skin, her nice, St. John knit suits, and just wear her, comfortable clothes, because it was so dang hot in Mississippi. And it's, like I said, maybe it's just something in the blood. It comes through the second you step into that, over that border.
Well, then it also seems like, and this isn't exclusive to the South, when somebody leaves at 18 and comes back, it seems like they are back into that teenage mindset again, that they're always children. Did you experience that when you would go back home, for lack of a better term?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, remember, you know, you're in college and you think you're this independent, wonderful creature, and then you go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you're put in your childhood bedroom again, and you start thinking the way that you thought when you lived in that room, even though that's not really you anymore. And I think it is putting on, it's like a set of clothes, you know. You put on your church clothes, like all of a sudden you know, you behave better. and it is funny, but you're right. I think no matter how old we are, when we return to the places of our childhood, I think that's who we become again, or our thought processes try to bring us back to that person again.
I'm talking with Karen White about her brand new novel, Dreams of Falling. It's available now wherever your books are sold from the good folks at Berkeley Press. That's part of the Penguin Random House family. Karen, as we continue this, the book, one of the themes is the secrets, and in particular, secrets that we keep from even our closest friends. And I've often found that a stranger on an airplane will probably tell you more than they would ever tell their closest friend. So many problems come from those secrets, so why do we do it?
You know, and this is something, and it's explored a little bit in the book, and I wish I could pull out the quote exactly, but the thing about secrets, there's so many reasons for secrets. Sometimes it's to conceal in a negative, malevolent way, and sometimes it's to protect. And in this case, it's the secret, you know, all the secrets kept in this book were to protect. They had kind of devastating consequences at the end, as you know, they are all revealed. But then the forgiveness happens. But yes, you know, these two best friends, Cece and Biddy, are holding on to secrets from each other to protect each other. And you know, it's not until the end that you realize that there's a lot of miscommunication that had happened. But they did it out of love. Every secret that is held in this book is done from a position of love.
The book also features this plantation known as Carrollmore. You have a passion for old houses. Where did that come from?
Oh, isn't that funny? I think it's because when we lived in London, we lived in a Victorian building. But my mother said, even as a child, you know, if we would be driving through a main street of a town, and I'd see, it wouldn't have to be big or spectacular, but if it had like the beautiful architectural details that you just don't see anymore, like any of those older homes, I would be like, Mom, you know, stop the car. I want to look from the curb. And I've always loved that. And it's so funny. And as I grew older, well, we lived in that building in London, which, you know, the leaded glass windows, the tall ceilings, the beautiful cornices and moldings and the mahogany doors. I mean, you just don't see this stuff anymore. And I loved all those details. And it's really funny because when I started writing and I fell in love with Charleston and all those beautiful old houses, that's when I started having an old house as sort of a main character in all of my books. I think it was also because I was a child, as a nomad child, I never had a hometown, so I always was looking for a place to call home. And I think in my books, these houses represented the home that I'd always been searching for. But what's so interesting, too, is that my daughter also fell in love with old houses, and she actually got a graduate degree in historic preservation and now works for the National Trust for Historic Preservation. So I guess you can say the apple does not fall far from the tree.
Nor would we expect it to. But something else that you've said in the past is that Pat Conroy was a great influence on you as a writer. I fell in love with Pat's writing with Great Santini and then Prince of Tides, and then I went back and read everything else that came from that. He's a South Carolina guy as well. But what is it about Conroy? What drew you to him? Was it Santini, Prince of Tides, any of those?
You know, it was the first book I read was The Lords of Discipline, and that was because when I was living in London, they were filming the movie, and they wanted American teenagers for, like, one of the big dance scenes, and I went to the American School in London, so that's where you would find American teenagers. And my sister-in-law and I were supposed to be extras in the movie, and I never heard of this Pat Conroy guy, so I immediately read the book and fell in love, and then I guess maybe it was in college then that I picked up Prince of Tides and Beach Music. I can't remember the timing of those. But when I read those two books, because I'd read Lords of Discipline and I'd loved his writing, that's when I was introduced and really fell in love with the Lowcountry. I mean, come on, beach music. Mm-hmm. There's no more beautiful book about the Lowcountry. It is a love story written for the Lowcountry. And I had never visited South Carolina before then. And as soon as, you know, I got married, we moved down to Georgia. And our first family vacation when our kids were little, we went to Hilton Head because I had to discover this place called, you know, the Lowcountry. And the first second I smelled the Pluff Mud, I was in love. Of course, my husband was saying, that smells like sewage. I'm like, no, it smells like home.
All right. Well, the book is Dreams of Falling by Karen White. It's out there, and it's a perfect one to take on vacation this year and read while you're not doing anything with the kids and just kind of sitting and watching them on the beach or whatever. I don't know if beach read is a derogatory term, but I think authors like it, right?
You know, it kind of depends, because sometimes, yeah, beach read is like, oh, it's easy and forgettable mm-hmm. and fluff. But to me, I think a beach read is just a good, satisfying read that you will have time to read in the summertime because you're not doing anything else. That's how I think of it.
Well, and that's a perfect timing for it. Dreams of Falling by Karen White. Karen, fantastic book. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.